You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast. From Los Angeles, I'm Ruha Taslimi. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host. And my guest today is Peter Banifaz.
Hi.
It's
so good to be here.
Who improv fans might know from Harold Team Queen George.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Anything else?
Improv-wise? No. That's it. Queen George. Maybe you see me around town doing silly things.
Uh-huh.
At shows.
On Mod Night for quite a while.
I was on Mod Night for almost 4 years, mm-hmm. Yeah. I was recently on Old Flame,
mm-hmm.
And then I stepped down. I thought it was time to sort of, give that slot, the opportunity to somebody else, because, you know.
Yeah.
It's the evolution. You got to respect the game.
Yeah.
That's what I always say. I always say that.
You do always say that. You're constantly saying, gotta respect the game.
Yeah.
You said it right before we started recording.
Right. I was like, gotta respect the game.
And I was just taking a sip of water.
Right. Well, I thought, I could
respect that
and show you how to respect that game.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty good motto for UCB.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And improv. Gotta respect that game.
Gotta respect the game. Oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's a double meaning.
It is a double meaning. And we are on a Persian team together.
Yes.
Shahs of UCB Sunset.
Yes, Shahs of UCB Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a show on Sunday at 9 p.m.
A few weeks ago.
Oh, this is in the future.
Dated.
Okay, gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So, Peter, how long have you been doing improv?
I've been doing improv, I think it's the first class I ever took was in 2009.
Uh-huh.
It was a place called called Ultimate Improv at the time. It was in Westwood, the one right next to UCLA.
Uh-huh.
And then now it's like the space or the improv space, or I don't know
uh-huh.
what it's called now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that I took like a 6-week class there, and then I took a class at IO after that, and then I came to UCB back in 2010. And then, I've been here ever since.
Yeah.
Majority of my experience with improv is with UCB and, like, UCB-style improv. Yeah.
What made you start taking that class?
I was just a typical LA actor. I just wanted to kind of pad my resume and just, like, have the improv on it.
Your manager said it was
exactly. It was my agent, I was saying. Because I was starting out, too, and I was trying to, like, do commercials. And he's like, oh, for commercials, they really want to have, like, improv on the resume, blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
And then, I did that, and I really didn't have an intention to, because I didn't consider myself like a comedian or anything like that. So I didn't really have intention to like follow through more than just taking like a couple of classes. But I ended up really liking it when I came to UCB, because it was like the first time where it was like structured in a way where I could sort of like, there was like a roadmap, and there was just a way you could, it just helped me learn the concepts much easier, and then mm-hmm. sort of like develop a love for it.
So you mentioned that UCB, like, it started to click with you more, gave you more of a roadmap. Do you have any, like, moments that come to mind where something really clicked in? Like, what were the key things for you for, like, connecting to improv?
I think I had there's a bunch of moments I feel like that I... One that really comes to mind is with Jessica Eason,
mm-hmm.
when she was coaching this little practice group we had. And then there was a scene, I don't remember what it was exactly, but like she wanted me, like something happened in front of me, I guess I didn't react to it. And she was kind of just like, come on, Peter, you have to react to that. Like you have to react to it like you are a person, like a real person. And like at the time, I almost felt like embarrassed and I felt stupid.
Yeah, yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah. I was like, but yeah, it was. She was absolutely right, and it was like one of the first times I like realized that like, I like because I had trained so long as an actor, and I was sort of forgetting about that aspect. I was forgetting that they're the same thing. Like, and that kind of made me realize, no, wait, why don't I just do the thing that human beings do, or at least try my best to do the thing that human beings do, and I will find ways to heighten that. But it has to start at the human level. And that was like when like I started really working on like grasping the fundamentals of sort of like committed play and like how to actually bring in game into that and stuff like that. Yeah, that was definitely a moment. I know there's other moments, but that was the one that just definitely really stands out.
Yeah. So that resonates a lot with me too. Like, sounds like you connect via a more actorly approach and connecting to like being a human.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I always also admire other performers that I see that like, they really have, I see like the writer side of them where they're just able to like create such funny, interesting specifics so fast. I was just, my brain just doesn't work like that. It's just too hard for me. Like when I see people like, you know, Alex Ferney, Devin Field, these guys, Alex Berg, they're just so good at specifics. Cale Hills too, just so good at really funny specific. Greg Gallant, another guy that's he's amazing. Yeah,
but to me, I would say you're great at specifics, but it's because
thank you.
You're like, I was just gonna say that it's just because you're you, you know, like.
Well, thank you.
Like it's your brain. Like all those people are exactly who they are. I think they're great because they have honed.
Right,
they're just being them, and that's how they
work,
or whatever. But like, yeah, I mean, to me, I'm so surprised by your specifics, or you know,
I have a thing where I feel like sometimes my brain just works slower than my mouth, and like I'll say a specific, and then it'll hit me a second later, and I think often like people. In the audience too can tell like this guy had no idea he was gonna fucking say that, or like, and now I'd like to just see how he's gonna take his foot out of his mouth.
How do you feel about it? But those moments, like, I mean, you know, we say things that surprise ourselves, right?
Sure.
In scenes. Do you have fun getting that foot out of your mouth?
Yeah. Definitely. And there's times that like things happen in a scene where you're like, I want to definitely take a step back from this. But yeah, for the most part, I like to surprise myself. I like to surprise like my scene partner and the audience. But I've learned to that the surprise is much less important than, doing that scene, doing the scene that you set forth with your partner and committing to that scene. One thing in my past I've had some problems with is like, you know, shiny object comes on. And maybe play with it a little too much. But I've learned to, or at least got better at acknowledging that shiny object, that little fun thing that just happened, and then putting it away so we can continue the scene.
Yeah, restraint.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Discipline. I've learned a lot of discipline thanks to working with just amazing people for a while now.
Yeah. I feel like that is a big part of growth as an improviser, is getting to the point of having that discipline and that restraint. Because the surprises are great, but not if you're like trying to make them happen.
Yeah. And then the audience, because audiences are savvy. Like, even if they don't know shit about improv or shit about comedy, it's something about our natural instincts that we pick things up. Mm-hmm. And we can tell when someone's trying too hard and when someone's not genuine, you know? And it's like, I completely agree.
Yeah.
And that's like someone like you. It's great. It's like you have so much commitment and it's like you're so funny, but I never see that like, oh, I'm trying to get a rise out of the audience. It's always you just let it come to you. I guess that's another thing. I get patience. Like, trusting that moment will come to you, that you could do whatever you want. I mean, you could do the thing that you can, if you want to be big, you want to be silly. Yeah. That moment will come to you.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to push it. Yeah. Yeah. To learn that.
It takes a lot to learn that, right?
Oh, for she's.
You're very passionate about improv, obviously.
Yeah, I am passionate. I love it.
Are there any, like, do you coach?
I do coach.
Yeah.
Like every once in a while. I was coaching more regularly for like a year, and then now I'm just sort of like every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
But I enjoy coaching.
Yeah.
It has its own challenges.
Yeah.
Obviously, but like I enjoy it for the most part. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in my coaching, I find myself for sure still finding my voice as a coach.
Definitely.
And it is, and you pick up so many things from other coaches. I feel like I'm a conglomerate of all the coaches I worked with.
Yeah,
as
same.
A coach.
Definitely.
But that's cool. I also feel like that's what makes coaches coming up now so incredible, because they're kind of these, we're all learning from the best people.
Right, right.
And then those best people have learned from so many of the best people, and it's just like getting it's distilled into something really great. What are some of your favorite exercises for, like, for helping people understand game or
for game? Man, exercises for understanding game. I feel like understanding game, like if you come to UCB, that's probably the hardest thing. I mean, that was the hardest thing for me, because when I graduated, I passed 401 first try, and I thought, wow, nice, I'm really getting these concepts. And I really honestly didn't understand game till like 3 years after that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It just took me a long time to understand that concept and like be able to have the discipline and stick to it. For game, I feel like, man, one thing that just, it's not necessarily the most fun exercise, but it's a good exercise, is basically doing a scene and then doing the sort of like, raise your hand when you see the first unusual thing. You know, personal, you know, and you raise your hand, and I feel like it, even though it stops everything, you keep having to start the scene and stop again, but it's like a good form of side coaching where people can immediately see what you're talking about and see the results of that note, as opposed to sort of like doing it and then talking about it. So I really like that exercise.
It's so great. It's so great to get people to, force people to take that moment of like, oh, that's funny. Why is that funny?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like, what is the unusual thing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, why is it funny? Okay. And like, basically, you know, what would be the philosophy behind this unusual thing?
Mm-hmm.
And then if this, then what else would this person do?
Yeah.
And like, and then, you know, get back into the scene. And I feel like for me, that's been a helpful exercise, like for me to learn. You know, so that's one that I've kind of worked on with people regarding game.
Because there's a thing coming up too, where it's like, until you grasp it, and have those exercises to grasp it, you're sort of floundering around, you know, like, oh, everybody's saying something, the straight man's very unusual,
the unusual
person's unusual about like eight things
instead of
one.
The straight man like becomes unusual, like, absolutely.
And
that
then
was
you're like, oh, simplicity.
That was one of my big things. Like, even when a lot of times when I would come out as a straight person, like, somehow I would become weird. And it's like, I'm the doctor, whatever. And it's like, but I'm also a ninja. Like,
yeah.
And it's just like, and I would
and
get
you
that
didn't
note.
Mean to,
no,
but,
it would just
but it just happens.
Happen. Yeah. Like, or somehow. Like, a mistake happened, and I would justify the walls. But, like, game is definitely hard to teach, man. Especially, like, UCB does such a great job. The curriculum sort of, like, going over the game. But, like, independently coaching, it's definitely harder. And, like, I haven't really coached a lot of, like, people in, like, 101, 201, 301. So, like, I didn't have to work on game a lot with people. A lot of, I work with a lot of people on, like, pulling premises. Because for people, like, preparing for, you
auditions.
Know, mess hall auditions or stuff like that. Or Herald and stuff. Just kind of just, like, help, you know, stuff with pulling premise or, like, second beats. You know, bringing more like the acting approach, listening. Like, one great listening exercise I love is, not only do I like to teach it, but also like to do it, is when you put two chairs together, two people's backs to each other, and they both close their eyes.
Yeah.
And they do an entire scene as if those restrictions aren't really on them, other than the fact that they can't get up, you know. And it's so, and it's like scenes are so damn funny always, like for the most part, because people are listening because all their other senses that they use for scene regularly are restricted. So it's crazy how great scenes naturally can become if we're just like listening. And that's like a key, that's a key cornerstone of acting too. So it's like, I feel like these are all this, again, like all the same thing.
I don't know about you, but for sure for me, like the simple things that they told us at the start took so long to sink in. Like why, who, what, where was important, or, you know, or like, or just exactly what you were just saying. Like I don't know. It's interesting that it's so hard to do something simple. Like once you get it, you're like, oh, that. Yeah. It is simple, but there's no way to get there.
Just doing it and failing and looking stupid in front of, or at least feeling like you look stupid in front of people.
Yeah.
But you know, I've done so many shows in front of like three people. Mm-hmm. And even that, I felt dumb. Like if I didn't feel like I succeeded in my own mind. It's like, there's some.
And even now, I mean, now, like that failure and experience also prepares you for the fact that it is still in the moment. It is still improv. Not everyone, like, we're still going to have bad scenes every once in a while. And you just are more comfortable with
it definitely
getting
sucks.
Through that. Or, or trying to make it work still. Like, you, I think that makes you, there's like a whole set of improv skills just around.
Based on failure.
Just failure and like failure. Being able to like deal with the, like, those turns or whatever. Yeah.
It's definitely hard not to walk away from a show that you thought was not successful for whatever reason and not sort of go over it over again in your mind. And like, I still do that. And I've been doing that ever since I started. I don't mind it though, because I feel like it makes me better. And it's just sort of working on this thing that I enjoy that's important to me. But like, yeah, it's hard. It's because you just got to remind yourself that like, there are zero stakes in this thing that will never.
Yeah.
It lasts for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and then that's it. There is a 20-minute shelf life to this thing that you're putting so much, you're being so hard on yourself about. But
I do try to relieve when I see it in my friends or community, like teammates or members, that they're being like so hard on themselves. Or we judged the Herald, for example, so harshly, like, really got to get this thing right. And like. And that's healthy to the end point of continuing to grow in it and knowing, like, yes, even when things are going great, like, you haven't, there's no end point of work, to at least to me, I don't know if you agree with that, of like getting this work, like, you're always gonna grow at it and continue to get better, but also, like, you're not terrible if you made a mistake in a scene or something.
Right.
Like,
definitely. You're not as good as your last scene. You know, not like, you know, it's shit happens.
Yeah.
Two people, three people, four people on stage. Sometimes just things go not the way you want it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they go exactly the way you want it. And all you can do is just keep working on those ways that put you on the path to sort of consistently have it to go away. I mean, like,
and learn from those.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, it sucks to do a scene, let's say on the Franklin stage in front of Harold Knight and not have it go well.
Yeah.
That feeling sucks.
Yeah.
But I feel like often the people who are in the scene are the ones beating themselves up the most. And the audience is like, well, that was fine.
Okay. Yeah.
Very rarely do you, like, is the scene go bad and the audience is, members are probably going like, oh, that was awful, you know, like,
no. Yeah,
so it's like,
I don't think I've ever seen a scene so bad that I was like, oh, like, no. I'm upset.
Right exactly. Like, but it's like we beat ourselves up so bad about it, we just gotta, but then it feels great when you do a scene that people love, you know, so
yeah,
it's a journey.
Yeah. Now with the Herald, that's the form that you're doing the most these days.
Yeah.
So, Queen George, what opening are you guys doing right now?
So, Queen George's opening is an opening that I don't know what the name would be, other than, like, opening of Queen George. No,
is it like a medley one?
So it's a little medley. We do a little medley. That's a great name. We do the Queen George.
I stole it from music.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is that? I've never heard of it. No, the Queen George medley is what we do, folks. And so basically, we start, you know, obviously we're getting a suggestion, and then the suggestion leads to a definition. Let's say the suggestion is like, you know, beer. I'm just looking at a thing that says beer. Beer. And then beer is a beverage, alcoholic beverage made from wheat or hops or barley or whatever. And then that will lead to a rant. Well, someone will say, beer makes me think about how, you know, the time when I would drink in high school and blah, 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 blah. And then that will lead to a sort of like a
typical rant where someone just says, this makes me think of a time I drank beer in high school.
Yeah, typical rant. Every rant I've classic ever heard is about somebody in high school drinking beer.
Sharing one memory.
Just class. So, like, this is a rant about whatever, right? But they're always about beer. So rant, you know, and then that.
And the rant typically being a point of view about something.
The rant is
going to
be,
I
hate, I once did this and I loved it, I once did this and I hated it.
Yeah, I drank beer in high school and it was gross.
It's a rant, less a story, obviously, than more of a rant. But yeah, good. That's a good point. Because I guess
sorry,
that
just wanted to do a bit. I know you were just. Glossing
oh no,
over
no,
it,
no,
but, yeah.
No. I'm close to leaving.
He's walking out. Peter, please come back.
I'm at it.
Peter,
don't
Peter.
Call me. I'll call you.
Oh, come on, Peter.
No, but I'm back. I'm back. I love
oh,
you too
thank
much.
Goodness.
Wow, I lost my train of thought.
So you do the rant.
Right, we do the rant, and then that basically leads to a little sort of like a character tag out situation where it's like the rant inspires a character who sort of basically contextualizes what we think is funny.
About the point of view.
About the point of view.
Yeah.
Solidifies it with, and then sort of gives a label and justification on it.
And then we
move on to
dang,
the next definition. Yeah,
you got your label and your justification in there.
That's the ultimate goal. It doesn't always happen like that, but
maybe it could.
Ultimate goal is to at least get one of them.
Because
having two is not. It happens sometimes, but yeah.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. It's that sweet spot. Every once in a while, the premise in the opening has all of those elements.
Yes, and that makes it incredibly easy. And then sometimes it. Doesn't and you
sometimes
have to
it has just point of view and then you'll figure out the rest.
Definitely. and then that's it.
Yeah.
And then sort of like it's a form that basically we developed with Mike McClendon, Alex Ferney, and Ryan Rosenberg, who have been all of our coaches.
Who's your current coach?
Ryan Rosenberg.
Great.
Yeah.
That's great.
He's fantastic and working on some great stuff right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, but all of the coaches we've had have been like incredible. Yeah. Like they're all so different, but all have one thing in common, which is like they love improv, and it's like they have excellent insight.
Yeah. Do you feel like how would you describe? There's always like different types of improv players, right, on a team. Like, what do you think your role is on Queen George?
I think one thing, well, it's my role, I think probably originally what I was put on the team for is a little bit different than what I'm working on now. Like, I'm working on sort of rounding out my game, so to speak, and like just being, you know, more patient and being a good support player and being good voice of reasons, a lot of stuff working on now. But I think like what I would say I bring to the team is I bring kind of my energy I bring my commitment, my own like weird little performance things that I kind of I guess like to do. I would say that like sort of if it was like a basketball team, I'm kind of like I'm like a scorer, I guess.
You initiate a bunch or
I've definitely slowed down initiating. Just again, just working on like being more like. Just more well-rounded player. But yeah, like a lot of times I would initiate or like I would just, you know, come in with like a big character or something like that. But that was kind of like one thing I guess I would say I bring to the team.
Yeah.
But
so for rounding out, you've like
I definitely slowed down. Like,
yeah.
Slowed down my thinking, sort of. Like, mm-hmm. sometimes I would just be a little, like, it goes back to discipline. I've disciplined myself a little bit more. I'm just still, you know, things I'm obviously working on, but sort of slowed down, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I've become much, much more comfortable in the support role.
Right.
Before I was a little bit, sometimes I felt like
voice of reason, is that the same as
support
overall
roles.
Ensemble
yeah
support.
Yeah, it's like okay. like, you know, tag outs and sort of walk-ons and stuff. I feel like that was that was a weaker point for me, because mm-hmm. I felt like if I wasn't initiating, or if I wasn't sort of in the main mix of it, it was harder for me. That's a lot of stuff I've been working on now. I feel like I've gotten a little better at that. Voice of reason, one thing I've worked on that is just really playing it truthfully and never looking for the laughs of the voice mm-hmm. of reason. Because the beautiful thing is, voice of reason, the laughs literally come to you. Like, just being a human being and saying, like, what the fuck are you doing to the other person? What you're doing is weird. Yeah. Why are you doing this? Okay, let's move on to the thing we're supposed to do. Like, it was so much easier than I was making it.
Yeah.
And that way, it's so much more... it makes it so much easier and clearer to your scene partner, and it's more respectful to your scene partner. I feel like if your scene partner comes out, initiates on the unusual person, that person is unless there was something in the opening where you feel like you both know you're going
to excuse me. I'm sorry, I had to cough.
Okay, I'm out of here. Sorry.
Oh, Peter,
don't call me. I'll call
Peter,
you.
Peter, please come back from the car.
Excuse me. Where's my car?
Peter, please come back from
the valet. Okay. Oh. No, the way I feel about you and the way I feel about this improv podcast, I'm not going to go anywhere.
Oh, great.
So I lost my train of thought again.
Peter and I, in general, in our friendship, do a bit where
we keep walking away.
We walk away over little disagreements.
Right.
like, not even disagreements. Right response. And we are doing an inside joke on this podcast.
Right. And we really hope you're loving it.
You're loving it, right?
You're loving this, right? You all want me back. You want me back on as soon as possible.
Totally. I totally agree. And like creating something we recognize, like the voice of reason plays such a key role in creating a relationship or a context or a backdrop so you can see what's happening. You know?
Right. Like, right. Definitely.
Yeah.
I feel like when you're coming up and you're learning the process, you're kind of going like, oh, wait, it sounds like voice of reason is not the fun one. I want to be the silly, unusual person.
Yeah.
But then it's like, again, talking about Greg Gallant again on my team. He's just, when you see his voice of reason, he's just so fucking hilarious. Because he will use specifics. He will call out the unusual thing. He will just play a perfect regular human being that's like, doing what a regular human being does in that situation,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and still play a game, and it's just like it's such a always I learn from him in terms of like, he's not panicked, he's not worried, he's like, oh, I'm just gonna react like a person,
I know the situation, I'll play this,
and I'm gonna help
real thing out,
exactly, I'm gonna help my partner who's clearly playing the unusual person,
yes,
define and consistently redefine that game.
And it is, you also said how supportive it is of their idea.
Definitely.
It is the most supportive thing you can do for their idea. They've told you they want something from you, like, give them that. You
definitely.
Know, like, let them shine in that or whatever. Yeah.
Again, another person...
or help them even shine in it, like, make it even better for
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. I mean, I could say that about really anybody on my team. I could say
that's
that
so
about...
Great.
Yeah, I mean,
there's so many great people in this community.
I mean, this is
just
all the Herald teams are just fantastic, and like I'm fucking loving watching every one of these teams because they're all so different.
Mm-hmm.
All these teams are different, like the energies, vibes, all is different. It's just so enjoyable,
and they're all so great.
Definitely,
yeah.
And the Ego,
it's really exciting.
Ego and Julia Meltzer on my team, they're just again like just so good at. Just being a regular, normal person and then getting laughs by reacting like a regular, normal person. They never panic. You know, there's no panic in them.
Mm-hmm.
Greg
never
Wallace, another
selling
guy.
Out for a joke. It's always
never.
Like just committed and real. Yeah.
Definitely. And then
yeah.
Ed Rowe, who's just incredibly just intelligent player and just like he's so eloquent and
he's so great.
Yeah, he's great. And again, just always playing a regular human being. Yeah. And I really learned a lot from all of them because And Carl Tart, who I think is one of the best character mm-hmm. people I've ever seen in my mm-hmm. life, he can just play a regular. I mean, I'm learning from them constantly
because
it's
wonderful.
Something I need to work on. So it's like I feel really lucky to be able to work with everybody.
Yeah.
Wow, Dhruv. I mean, I keep having to mention everybody. I'm sorry to keep going to run down all the team, but like everyone, just all these people are people like. I feel like if you, like me, want to work on being a better committed voice, you know, straight man or voice of reason or whatever. Those are just all the names I said. I just. Great people to watch.
Yeah, and it's good to recognize the people that like you like how they do it. It clicks with you in a way, you know.
And I'm just such a fan of my team too. That. I can't help but
it's so wonderful.
Give them the shout outs they deserve. But
it's such a great team.
Yeah, I think I've been very lucky. And again, I mean, you're so great. Like you're talking about just you approach your work. Sort of as an actress, as a thespian first, uh-huh. and the comedian is the sort of the second layer there.
Yeah,
so it's like,
same as you. Yeah, I didn't really think I was going to be a comedian.
Yeah,
now I'm like, okay, yes, I recognize
this is fun,
that I'm like, funny and I like this.
But
that's my path to it for sure.
And you're someone that you can play great characters, and then I've seen you play just like, you know, just such a truthful, committed. Voice of reason. And I love using voice of reason. I don't know if they're still using straight man's.
I don't know. Voice of reason.
Voice of reason
clicks with me too.
Sounds nicer. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. like, it feels like a more inclusive word that it is about what it really is.
What it really is. Yeah, which is just like the reasonable like point of view in the scene. Whatever the normal viewpoint would be like the audience is thinking.
Absolutely.
Like it's what anyone watching this would be thinking.
Definitely.
It's just a reasonable response, whereas I don't know, straight man, I don't know, it's like you're supposed to be like
right,
like, I don't know,
it just it doesn't sound fun, it doesn't sound very inclusive, and it's probably just an old school ass term that people have been using in comedy since like vaudeville days. It's nice that also, you know.
And I always felt a little strange describing it to anyone who was gay.
Straight man, yeah. You're
going to
play the straight. No, it means almost nothing, really.
Yeah, the words itself, we understand what it means because we've done the classes here, but like, the words itself, voice of reason, conveys more of what it means.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And that's the beautiful thing about improv, too, right? It's this art form that is not old.
Right,
we're in the beginning of it still,
or at least the sort of the way we do it, the long form sort of.
Oh, and
like,
long form, even younger. Yeah. The long form improv is very, very young.
Right.
And we're like learning so much about it. The people who teach us are still learning. We're still learning. You know, just like growing and becoming this incredible thing. And we're here for. To see those like transitions and growing moments happen, and to see the language used,
definitely.
For example, like change, like
the evolution,
or like all the little evolution. I mean, even just in my short time here, the way that things are taught have been, you know, have changed at least like a few times over.
I mean, absolutely. Just for myself, being since 2010 to now, it's less than 10 years, but it's like it's been such a shit. Like there's just. So this is so big now. Like it's gotten so big now. Like the sort of like the roots of the school and the theater and the brand itself, and like how many students are in the student body, and like the way it's recognized throughout the city, and like it's respected and in not only in the industry but just sort of average people in the street, at least definitely in LA and like New York and like Chicago, and like that's really impressive.
Yeah.
And that's really just a testament to the teachers, the artistic directors, and you know the founders and the students who are just like doing.
Yeah, everybody
doing
who's
their
here
thing.
Cares about it
Love
a lot,
it.
Works really hard, and it shows. I wanted to ask you. You were on Maude and Harold simultaneously,
right?
For a few years.
Was
like, how do those affect each other? Do they at all? What's your experience with it? Like, do you grow in both? Like, do they affect each other in your growth or in your work? Or was it really separate?
It was a great experience. And there's definitely, like, similarity in terms of improv helps you understand the type of, you know, heightening and gameplay that's necessary for a successful comedy sketch.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that really helps. And then sometimes bringing, you know, obviously when you're on stage, things, you forget a line or something happens, there's a mistake. Improv really helps you fill in those gaps, really helps you sort of stay in the moment, mm-hmm. stay on your toes. And often those improvised lines from mistakes or whatever, the audience goes crazy for.
Yeah.
Obviously, though, like, there's a certain level of respect that you got to show the writers. And,
right, you're not trying to improvise through your sketch. But that skill set comes into play.
But you know, it's a fairly good sized commitment, because you mm-hmm. know, it's like a bunch of rehearsals for Maude, and then you know, you want to commit to, obviously you have to commit to practice for Harold, and mm-hmm. like, so yeah. But it was a wonderful experience for me. For me, the real reason I just stepped down was really, it was the time commitment was becoming too difficult for me.
Yeah.
And it really wouldn't have been fair to my teammates or to the school.
Or to
the people who want to get on, who were like, hey, I have the time and I want to commit. So, like, but I was just so so blessed to be able to do both. It's just so fucking fun, man. And that's, in the end of the day, it's just so fun. Like, you get you take shows seriously, a little more seriously than we should probably sometimes. Like, you get really high when it's good, you get a little low when it's down, but it's like, in the end of the day, it's so much fun. You're always learning, and then you're around like some of the best people I've ever met in my life. Like, the people I've met in comedy, I've been, you know, and I've been up, down, in every which way with, in terms of meeting people and the type of people I've had in my life, and like, just I've met some of the coolest, most genuine people in this community, and then it really feel like I've become a better person. At least, definitely a much more open-minded and mm-hmm. aware person. But yeah, I mean, then in that case, a better person. Yeah,
yeah. And I touched on that too before in that episode before. So I was just gonna ask you if you feel like the improv work like connects to other aspects of your life. Yeah,
it's like, it's learning how to, let's say, just in terms of being on a Harold team, or even on any team, like whether you're two people, three people, four people, eight people, it's like the consciousness and the consideration of what of their wants, their needs, learning to constantly juggle that with your wants and needs, and making sure that it's done in a way where you guys are performing, having fun, and everyone's getting along. I mean, it's such a great lesson for life. And then for our industry, if somebody, you know, wants to be in a writer room, wants to be a producer, wants to be an actor on a show or a film, it's all collaborative. And it's like, excuse me, my phone is going off.
I'm walking.
No, please, come back. Nope. Please. I'm so sorry about that. I'm so sorry. No, come back.
Valet? Excuse me, valet?
This is the hallway. Valet wouldn't be in the hallway.
Oh, fine, I'm back.
Sorry. It was my agent. Hello, agent? Deal you want to give me? I can't. Bye-bye.
Why did you say no?
too busy right now. I got a show later.
A major deal?
Yeah.
Wanted to give you a major deal?
Yeah, they wanted to give me a major deal.
Okay, well, seems like something you might want to consider.
I'm done with the business. I'm going to move to the woods and stop bothering people.
Are you still going to do improv?
Yes. That'll never stop.
Now, you'll never stop.
No.
So I was just going to ask, what would it take for you to... or do you ever think, like, we touched on this as well a little bit, like, are there moments of questioning, like, are you supposed to do this? Or you're just, you know, you're supposed to be an actor and an improviser and you're never shaken.
Yeah, luckily, I know that some people struggle with stuff like that. But I've been lucky that I've been, my confidence in myself and like my belief has been like unwavering really since like 2005 when I was like, okay, I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's been pretty unwavering. It's almost like I felt like I saw it in my mind's eye, what I wanted, and I just keep going for it. And
that's great.
Knowing that there's going to be a lot of ups and downs and bumps along the way. And like, I feel like the two most important things for me is just always being thankful for what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then staying humble and aware of yourself,
mm-hmm.
and then keep moving forward, working, and then not giving up. And I feel like that's all you can really do.
That's great.
That's all you can really do. But yeah, I'd love to be doing improv forever. I mean, you know, who knows, you know, at some point they might, you know, decide, you know, they want to take me off a Herald team or, you know, whatever. And I'll have to make a decision of how I want to continue doing improv. But I definitely would love to continue doing improv because it's so fun. Something, it's a cathartic release in there. It's like a workout for your soul. And then again, just really just kicking it with my homies. Like some of the dopest people I've ever met in my life. So it's like
workout for your soul. I love that.
It really feels like that for me.
Yeah.
I would like to continue doing it. I would even hopefully when career things take me to a different level where let's say I'm not around as much, I'd still love to come back and do shows if the theater would ever have me just because.
I don't think they'll have you.
Well, I mean, I guess I don't know what to say with that. I'd be bummed if I'm like, I'd love to come back and do a show. Like, no, we won't have you.
No, we won't. Like,
that sucks. I'd be.
You're
I'd
like,
be
what? Heartbroken.
Yeah. Like, what? We don't need your kind here.
Oh,
we don't need people under the height of 5'8".
The future is dark.
You're light skinned.
Under 5'8", you are done.
Done.
Do you have like any like? Do you still get nerves before you perform?
You know, when it comes to Heralds, like I guess the part of me that's always like when I go into do an indie show, a lot of times I'm like I just want to have fun. I don't really care how the team does.
Uh huh.
I mean, I do, but I just want us all to have fun. Like, let's not worry if. But when you do Herald, it's a little bit kind of like, you know, you have a certain responsibility to do it right in front of the student body.
Uh-huh.
You have a certain responsibility, it's sort of to the school to like do it the way they want you to do it. And sometimes, like, isn't there a little nerves come up to like, you know, hope that as a team we can sort of hit our marks because also you judge as a team and it's like you grow so fond of each other and so fond of this process that you understand that it's just the way of life, you know, is that teams have to come and teams have to go. That's just has to be. So like that is in the back of your mind, not all the time, but you're always like, I need us to do well as a team because, you know, we need to sort of like show that we consistently deserve to be on the stage and in front of this audience and stuff like that.
And you want it for your teammates too.
Exactly.
You want your team to do well and
it's like you want, right. You it's just, that's kind of part of the game. But for me, at least, thank God, it doesn't outweigh the fun and the excitement.
Yeah.
My first year, the first like 3 months, I would get kind of nervous before shows.
Mm-hmm.
But once the show started, that would all go away. But right before, but now it's kind of like, you feel a heightened sense, but it's more of like the excitement of I'm about to do this thing that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And sometimes you get, you know, sometimes you get good notes, sometimes you get bad notes, but the notes are always helpful.
Yeah, they really are. The bad notes might even be more helpful.
The bad notes are always more helpful.
Yeah. For sure. I mean,
for sure. The bad notes
it's
are always
happening,
more helpful.
And you gotta learn something from it.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. good notes are important too, just because it gives someone, let's say, student or someone, a context of like, of where they are and what works and what doesn't.
I'm very into constructive.
Sure.
Yeah, and then, like, and I'm very into also like balancing out like giving credit for what's good
definitely.
And areas you can work on, even in my own self-reflection and growth. It'll
for
be
sure.
like, oh, okay, this area I wanna improve or I'm not feeling good about, but I also try to acknowledge and be grateful for the areas where I am feeling strong, and not just focus on the like the holes of weakness or whatever.
Yeah. And it's hard to not focus on those things, at least for me.
Yeah.
Like, show will go really well,
yeah,
and I'm like, oh, but that one fucking part, that one line I said, or that one thing, and it's like it gets so nitpicky.
I also like it to be acknowledged as a whole piece in notes, you know, like.
Sure.
So I want to, I think it's important to some players coming up to get the confidence of knowing what things they're doing are working well. I think it's so important to
it's
give them those notes
that,
and it's only fair. And then also like, it was this whole thing and it had good moments and moments we should talk about to learn from and moments we should recognize to learn why that was good. You know,
right.
I don't know. I think it's important to learn from both of those and I respond really well to that sort of coaching that's like,
yeah,
that doesn't like hold back what went wrong, but is also, but also isn't only the things that were wrong. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it feels like all the notes are just like, this was wrong, this was wrong, this was wrong.
I think, the only person should ever fucking give up doing this is a person who doesn't want to take notes.
Yeah.
If you don't want to take notes, you should give up doing any type of art.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't, you should never give up what you want just because someone has told you this. You got to do things your way to a certain extent. But, like, if you don't want to grow from people who you respect their experience and stuff, that's the only time I think people should give up.
Yeah.
Other than that, no matter what, if you like something,
keep
you got to keep doing it.
Yeah.
You got to keep doing it. And you got to be honest with yourself and always ask them, am I working my best?
Mm-hmm.
Am I at least doing my best every single time? And if you can say that, then that's all you can do.
Yeah.
And you just keep moving forward. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's so great.
And
are there any other forms, just like kind of wrapping up, that you really love besides Harold?
I love mono scenes. Mm-hmm. They're just so fun. It just feels like doing like a play, like an improvised play. I love doing The Pretty Flower.
Yeah.
Who it's just it's so fun. It feels like a very flexible form.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I love The Slacker. It's just again, these sort of sometimes the restrictions on a form become what's fun about it, and The Slacker not being able to edit, that's really fun. Yeah,
and do you like organic too? Besides premise,
I love organic. Yeah. I would say my favorite is organic, and it certainly has come easier to me than premise. But over the last several years, I've definitely really like found a real love for premise too, and a real appreciation for people who do it really well.
Yeah.
Again, like two people who do on my team, Drew Singh and Carl Tart, they're just so good at pulling premises when I start naming names, I'm like, I almost feel bad because then I want to start naming a lot of other names of people on other teams because I'm like, let it be known, like, you're all really fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, everybody on a Harold team is like, pulls premise like fucking butter.
Yeah.
Like butter.
Like butter.
Which is another term, another improv term, apparently. Yeah. Pulling premise like butter.
Yeah. And I also feel like premise and organic are so connected, too. Like,
sure.
I think the things that make me great at organic and love it are what make me a better premise player. And certain things about premise have made me a better organic player. More patient and organic, more, more able to identify the thing we're going to play, or like labeling things like that.
Yeah.
Like,
so like labeling is so important. Like, contextualizing at least for your partner and the audience, like what you think is funny or what you guys think is funny. Yeah. It's great.
Do you have any closing thoughts for us, Peter?
Closing thoughts.
This has been so wonderful.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate you having me. I appreciate being on this. I guess closing thoughts for me, it really is just like, just keep doing this thing. There are times where it gets really frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the times you have to break through. So I've heard people say, oh, well, if it's not fun, why do it? But the truth is, anything you want to be good at, there are times that it's not going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to break through that.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be moments when you're like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
You're going to be in 2-1, 3-1 going, I'm frustrated with this, frustrated with that. I don't think I'm funny.
Yeah.
Just push through that.
You're going to be on a Harold team thinking that.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're gonna be on a fucking network show going like thinking that
having those moments.
So it's like, yeah, just whatever you do, just keep moving forward. Be honest with yourself, and admit what you're good at to yourself. Admit what you're not good at, and then just keep moving forward and get better. And don't be a dick.
Yeah.
To each other. That's it.
So where can people see you on social media?
On social media.
And on teams.
You could see my Harold team and I with Queen George on Harold Night. You can follow me on Instagram at pbani, P-B-A-N-I. And that's it.
Well, thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was so great to have you.
Thank you.
Are you walking?
Huh?
Are you walking out?
I'll see you later.
Okay. Well,
valet.
Was that not nice enough?
Hold on, my agent's calling. Yeah. Something big?
Okay, no. Well, Peter left. Oh, wait, no, he's still outside laughing.
It's me, Peter.
Thanks so much, everyone.
And that was a long-form conversation. Tune in to the next episode when Peter Banifaz will be your host. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.